Marketing is a battlefield. Trends shift, strategies evolve, and only the bold stay ahead.
So, how do you cut through the noise and make an impact?
Welcome to the Marketing Pulse Podcast, where we decode marketing one powerful conversation at a time.
Hosted by Mukwemba Mangangu, Tukia Tambatamba, and me, Grace Gondwe, we bring you insights, strategies, and real talk on what's shaping the industry.
Ready? Let's get into it.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to yet another podcast, another episode of the Marketing Powers Podcast. And today, it's already started off strangely because I'm alone. So that I'm not alone, but I'm alone. The team, unfortunately, Tukia and Grace could not make it. They had other engagements. But nonetheless, the show must go on. And we have an amazing episode that we're going to have today. And our topic today is marketing the unseen. And so that's something we need to look into. How do we market things that our consumers cannot see? So a fun fact is 70% of consumers believe insurance is important, yet many delay purchasing it, which is strange. So my question is, for some of you, if the government did not put a regulation on even paying your car insurance, would you pay it or would you rather move around without it? So let's get straight into introducing today's guests, okay? So selling the unseen is one of the toughest challenges in marketing, especially when it comes to insurance. A product many people hesitate to buy until they need it. So how do you convince skeptical customers to invest in something they can't touch, see, or use immediately? Today, we dive into the art of marketing the unseen with a seasoned professional whose career spans over 24 years across industries like telecoms, banking, manufacturing, and insurance, with extensive experience in managing diverse clients from government ministries to the informal sector. He brings a wealth of insight into building trust and driving sales in skeptical markets. He is the Deputy Director of Marketing for Zisk General Insurance, Kuda Ngoma. Welcome.
Thank you very much. I didn't know all that was about me. But, yeah. Sounded like you're talking about somebody else. But thank you very much. I feel humbled. Thank you so much.
No, thank you. Thank you for making the time and taking time off your busy schedule to join us today. And I like how people are always reacting to their own CVs. Like, has it been that long already?
Indeed. You're making me feel old now. But yeah, good to be here.
And I was happy to find out. I'm like, okay, he's also a product of CBU. I'm like, that's great. I wish the other guys were here. Now we'd have had a CBU party. We had talked to one of our, you know, very people from, you know, our school.
Indeed, who, you know, indeed.
And achieved all this in the industry.
Yeah.
How has this 24 years been to this point?
It's been awesome. And I think what has made it awesome is that I'm doing what I love.
Okay.
I initially didn't even know that I was going to end up in marketing. But when I look back now, I see like everything that happened or the experiences that I had or the things that I liked.
Okay.
I think were leading up to the career that I eventually ended up being in. So it's been awesome. The good thing about marketing is that you're always learning.
Yes.
And like you've said, I've worked in telecoms, I've worked in manufacturing. So one minute I'm selling a welding machine, the other minute I'm selling phones and telecoms products, yes. The next minute I'm selling insurance, so I'm selling gas. So I love learning new things and selling new things. So it's been awesome.
Clearly, because, and this is what we like to tell people, and also just like the young people listening, that in as much as you started in one place, like it does not necessarily guarantee that that's how the rest of the path is going to look like.
Indeed.
Things change, and that's how come you found yourself in the marketing space now doing what you love, having found that on the way. So we have our opening question. how do you define marketing?
Oh, that's always a difficult question. Marketing has been defined in so many ways. But I think I would define it as it's activities that compel me to buy a product.
Okay.
Yeah, everything that happens that helps me to know about the product, first of all, appreciate what that product does for me, and eventually nudge me to want to try it or use it. But it also goes beyond that, in that the activities before you buy means that somebody was out there researching or trying to find out that there is a need for this product. So somebody thought people needed to communicate, and so let's create a phone, which has led to where we are with a mobile phone. So one, it could be somebody finding out or establishing that there's a need and then creating a product. So for me, it's all the activities that eventually lead me to buy a product. That would be a simple definition.
Yes.
Of marketing. Yeah.
I like that you've clearly stated the need to have our outward in approach. And I think which is something that's very important, and which you find that some people, strangely, to this day, still don't do. You find that they create things in-house and they decide to take them outside
yes.
as opposed to what is needed on the market. And then how do we bring it in to ensure that we can create a product that's actually needed based off our research
in the market.
Outside.
Yeah. There was actually a strange, that actually happened like in Kenya.
Okay.
With a product called microinsurance, basically for the low income groups.
Okay.
So they went out into the community, into a rural farming community with this product. And then when they got there, people were not interested in it, because their needs were not to do with that product, like protecting their crops.
Yes.
What they wanted was something that can help them to take their children to school and also help them with their health. Those were the two critical needs, not protecting their crops or their animals. Those they had covered, but what they needed was something that could help them take their children to school or health. So when you make a product in the boardroom and then take it out there without doing the research, this could happen. Yeah.
Yes. And I mean, exactly, for your company, all now you do is facing losses.
Exactly.
And time wasted, because now you have to go back to the drawing board. What Indeed. Did we do wrong, and how do we rectify it?
Exactly.
Anyway, you deal with, I guess, when we talk about consumer, when we talk about products, you deal with an unsought product, okay? I think it's a beast on its own. The fact that it's not something tangible that people can see. And now you have to sell insurance to millions of Zambians on a daily basis. Okay, so if we were to give insurance a personality, how would you describe it?
Insurance is very difficult to describe, but I'd call it an introvert, and also a bit complicated, more like a lawyer.
Okay,
where they have all these big fancy words that you cannot understand, but they are required, they are needed, and they really help the community. So it's a bit of an introvert in that I think we haven't done much in terms of sensitizing the public on what insurance is for, the benefits of insurance. And so you find that people don't know, they think it's complicated, they think it's something that they don't need in their daily lives. But having worked in the insurance industry, I've come to appreciate the importance of insurance. So I think insurance is still maybe introverted. It's not as loud as it should be. And if you look at other countries, the way they advertise insurance, just here in South Africa, the way they advertise insurance, I think you would not go a day without listening to an insurance ad or seeing something about insurance. So I think in Zambia, it's still a bit of an introverted person or character.
Oh, I actually like the fact that you've brought up South Africa. I think South Africa has the largest market for insurance in Africa.
Yes.
So what then, because even when we go back to you talking about ads, like if you're going to watch or even sit down watching DSTV, at some point there's going to be an insurance ad that you're going to watch, whether you're watching football, like something is going to pop up on your screen.
Indeed.
Yes. So now, in our case, I guess even just as Zambia, as a growing market, what has made insurance hard to sell?
I think firstly, like you stated in your introduction, it's an unsought product. So nobody wakes up and say, hey, let me go and buy myself some insurance for my house, you know? Oh, hey, isn't it time we got some insurance? So it's something that people think about when something bad happens. For instance, when we had this drought,
okay,
we got a lot of requests for drought insurance for crops.
Okay.
But unfortunately, you can't insure after the fact. So when you've suffered a drought, you can't now say, okay, I want to insure, I've lost this. Unfortunately, you have to insure before. So because it's unsought, that in itself makes it difficult to convince somebody. And also because there's no immediate benefit or value that you get. You pay the money and then you walk away with a piece of paper. And that's it. Now to sell peace of mind, because basically we're selling peace of mind.
Yes.
It's very difficult. Okay, to say, okay, now you are fine. If something happens to your home or your car,
yes,
I will be there for you. When a person is sort of like gauging, should I buy a bag of millimeter or should I, you know, buy some cement, I'm building a house, versus should I buy this such that in future, if something happens,
yes,
then this product will come and help me. Most people would like to think of their immediate needs and
yes,
not the future needs, because you may go 5 years, nothing happens. Then, you know, you're like, so why am I doing this? So just the fact that there's no immediate benefit and you're selling peace of mind, and also there are a lot of competing needs, makes insurance very, very difficult to sell. Of course, I think when there's an appreciation of what it actually does, I think that helps in a way. Yeah.
Oh, wow. So essentially, even when we talk about insurance, you're selling a promise.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
People have to reach a point where they get, you get it, you don't know whether it's going to happen or not.
Or
so
not,
whether it's
yes,
health insurance or you being involved in a car accident,
yes,
is basically, it might happen, it might
not
happen.
Yeah.
So someone now needs to reach a point where I am comfortable enough that I will pay for it, whether it happens or not, just
yeah,
in the event that it happens.
Yeah.
I guess a lot of people, I guess even in our community, like you've said, a lot of these things only happen after the fact.
Exactly.
Then you are like, I should have done that.
I wish I had gotten this. Yes.
Because actually now, if you have to start paying out of your pocket, it's like, yo.
That's when actually it happens, and we see this a lot.
Yes.
People coming to our office, you know, almost in tears or distraught because they've lost something or something has happened, something they never expected. They put something on a bus or on a truck. The truck flipped. That was their entire capital. They have a house and it burnt down, you know, so all these things do happen every day. We see it, but then because they are far and few, you know, between,
yes,
people don't get to hear it, or unless maybe it's a big natural disaster like drought or flooding, the way it has happened in Lusaka and elsewhere, that's when people get to sort of like think about insurance a bit, say, maybe I need to buy insurance.
And I think by the end of this conversation, you should have new customers.
Indeed.
Because
that's the whole plan.
Exactly. Let's bring that out and just bring it to a level of understanding. So then, what would you then call the common misconceptions about insurance and how you as a marketer tackles them?
First of all, it's I think the whole element of insurance, planning for, let's say, bad things. It's also a cultural thing.
Okay.
Because I don't know. Let me say, as Zambians, there is a tendency or an attitude to say, you know, don't start speaking bad into your life. Don't start thinking about bad things. Why should you say, oh, if this microphone blows up or if this computer somebody steals it, why are you thinking, though? Why are you inviting negative energy?
Yes.
By planning for such things? So we don't like to plan for such things because that's where insurance comes in. You look at your life and you say, where do I have potential risks? Where can I suffer potential losses, and how do I plan for that? So first of all, there's whether it's a cultural thing to say you are inviting bad luck, like you want to plan for your funeral. Why are you planning for your funeral? Why do you want to take out funeral insurance? Why are you thinking about insurance? I mean, insuring your life or paying for your own funeral. That's sort of like bad luck. So there's that as well, to say, do not think about bad things, or you're inviting bad luck into your life. The biggest one also is people think that it's a scam. Okay. and it comes from maybe not understanding that insurance is a contract and it's very specific. So if I insure your laptop against, you can choose to say, I want to insure my laptop against loss, if it is lost by theft, or if it's lost in a fire, or if it's damaged when I drop it or accidentally drop it. So if you say, I just want to have it insured against, let's say, theft.
Okay.
If it drops and breaks, then we can't pay that. So then you come and say, but I insured my laptop. And say, yes, you insured it, but you only insured it against a theft or a breakage and not the other. And so people then feel a certain kind of way, but how? A typical one, even a car.
Okay.
If you insure your car, there's what we call an added benefit, which sometimes comes with the policy and sometimes it doesn't, which is riot and strike cover. So if you are passing through CBU and the students do their thing and they damage your car, that is not covered, even if you've got comprehensive insurance cover. Okay.
Really?
But you might think, oh, I've got comprehensive, so I'm covered. Sorted, so when you go to the insurance company, say, oh, I was involved, my car was, you know, students attacked my car and damaged it, I'm claiming. We'll say, no, you don't have riot and strike, what we call riot and strike cover. So it's a contract with very specific things that you cover. You might say, I want to cover this against water damage. But of course, what I always encourage people to do is ask questions and then ask for what is included, what is excluded, so that then you know. If you want every possible scenario to be included, there are policies that can do that. So look, I want every possible scenario to be included in this. So that's where the scam element comes in, because probably you didn't ask and then you were given an off-the-shelf product to say, okay, this covers you, this covers you for this. But then when a particular circumstance happens, then you find that you cannot recover whatever you lost because it is excluded. So there are those things where people think is scam, but I'd urge people to ask questions and understand the terms and conditions of the same. Another misconception is that it is expensive, okay? But you find that it is actually not expensive, especially if you compare to what you have to spend to replace whatever it is you've lost.
Yes.
A big one is insuring a building such as this. It's much, much cheaper than insuring a car.
Oh.
Okay. So insuring a house with, say, 1 million kwacha, you only spend 1,000 kwacha per year. Okay?
Okay.
So this is a 1 million kwacha worth building, and you only pay 1,000 kwacha per year. So if there are floods, if it catches fire, if a truck rams into it, then you get paid up to 1 million kwacha, and you can rebuild or buy another property depending on whatever you want to decide. So it's not as expensive as people make out to be. And also, this is why people also think it's maybe for rich people or just for businessmen, but anyone can get it. You can insure your microphones, you can insure your phones, your computers, your speakers, everything can be insured. Okay. And when something happens, it breaks, it falls, you come and claim, and then you get your. So there are these misconceptions that are there. But I think it's just a question of understanding the product. Then you get to know, okay, so this is covered, this is not covered, and it is not as complex as you may think.
Okay. So is that to say, in your talking to consumers and trying to tackle this situation, a lot of it has to do with a comprehensive explanation as to what they need to understand about the misconceptions that are already there to get them on board?
Yes, actually, we need to do a lot of consumer education.
Okay.
Okay. I think that is what is a missing link. There's a lot of consumer education that is required. But then also the vastness of the products and the various exclusions and different structures in which the products are sort of like structured makes it quite an undertaking. But not to say that we have given up or giving up. No, but there's need for a lot of education, because for you to buy a product, you must appreciate it. So if you don't appreciate it, then you will not see the need for it.
True.
And with insurance is that we need to get to a point where we make you uncomfortable with the way you are living. You think you are okay, but you say, look, your laptop is. We've had a lot of theft of laptops from cars and things like that. What would you do? You lose all your data. You lose all the information that you have. Probably half of your life is sitting on that laptop.
Yes.
So then it makes you think and say, okay, I think I thought I was okay, but maybe let me do something about it. Let me insure my laptop. Okay. So yes, we need to do a lot of consumer education. I think once a person understands, and that's what we've seen, once a person understands the value of insurance, the benefit of insurance, they don't mind paying for it, even if they know it may not happen. But then that peace of mind becomes something that then sort of like helps them as they go along life, knowing that this particular aspect of my life is covered no matter what happens.
Oh, yes. I like something you mentioned actually earlier when you're talking about the misconceptions, and that being the cultural aspect. So I think there needing to be a paradigm shift within our culture. So it's just like you said, I remember we were at the gravesite. I think when my grandpa passed, they bought like the whole plot.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those where my grandmother knows where she's going to be buried.
Indeed.
right next to him.
Yeah.
Okay. So I remember someone else saying, why would you bury your plot? Like, that's just weird.
Exactly. So it's a very real aspect of our culture.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, and going back to the aspect of, you know, awareness and communication, because when we say failure to plan is planning to fail. But like you said, if people are unaware of what they should be planning for
yes,
then they wouldn't plan altogether. You also talked about making people uncomfortable, the reality in insurance, just so people know that you're not as comfortable as you think you are. So how then, because I know you now need to find a way in which you communicate this level of it may look okay,
yeah,
but things happen.
Yeah.
So how do you now bring in the aspect of storytelling to ensure that you can communicate these messages or drive out these emotions out of people to make them now go, okay, yeah, no, I'm really not as comfortable.
As I thought yes. I was. Yeah. I think, and you've mentioned storytelling, which is very, very critical, I think, for a product such as insurance. Because sometimes you need to visualize.
Yes.
What you are dealing with. And so when we do our ads or when we do our communication, we want to make people visualize, because like you said, they are not yet in a position where they are thinking about some of these things. So when you make somebody visualize, and visuals are very, very powerful at sort of like driving the emotions, which eventually lead you to do something about it. So if we are telling a story and it makes you visualize either your family to say, this is what may happen to your family if you're not around, or this is what will happen, for instance, if your car is involved in an accident and you don't have a car to take your kids to school, the inconvenience you suffer, you have to get a cab, you have to ask for a vehicle from somebody and things of that nature.
Yes.
Then you make it, you know, very apparent to the person, say, okay, I need to plan for this. Let me get a policy where if my vehicle is involved in accidents, I can get a courtesy vehicle that I can use while my car is being fixed or worked on. And when my car comes back, I give back the courtesy vehicle and I continue. So it's making people aware of the options, of the solutions that are there. Basically, it's a safety net. Okay, so that you don't have to go, we always go to the government, no government, yanganepo, kunotavutika, what. But if we can also plan, like you rightly said, if we plan, and insurance is basically a planning tool, okay, for you to make sure that should anything happen, you are able to be covered. One of the things that also, it's a cultural thing, it's a good thing, but also a negative thing. It's the whole aspect of Ubuntu.
Yes.
Where we have, when we have a problem, we do a WhatsApp group and then, you know, people come in and give us money and they help us out. So
yes,
it's a good thing. We are, sometimes we also just reach out. We see our friend, our brother, they're going through a rough time, we reach out and give them something, or we organize a family, we help them out, or indeed they reach out themselves and then the family organize. So that also sort of like has, I don't know whether it's sort of discourages or has not imprinted insurance as an option for me to plan, to have a real plan B, because most of us said, oh, I've got a plan B, but it's actually not there. But your insurance is your actual real plan B. If you invest in it and if you take time to take out a policy for different things, that would be a real plan B should anything happen. So, yes, I think storytelling, making these situations real to people, because sometimes we see it and we see something on TV or read it in the newspaper and say, that is something that can happen to somebody else. But when you're talking to somebody and you make it real, you make them visualize and make it relatable also to say, you've got three children and you need to take them to school and this is how much time you spend on the road and one day you don't have a car, what's going to happen? What will be the cost that you're going to have? And so that makes people sort of like start thinking about planning and having a safety net should anything happen.
Yes. And I'd like to, at least from my perspective, I think insurance firstly has the most... when done correctly and deliberately, like all your ads, I think do their very best to take advantage of the left and right side of the brain.
Yeah.
I think in one of the previous episodes, we were basically talking about how it's one thing to just bring out the logic,
yeah,
right? So most people won't remember that. But when mm-hmm. you also bring out things that conjure emotions
yes.
within people, then it starts to make sense. And then they're now able to also relate and remember in,
exactly.
in such a situation. So how yeah. come I feel like sometimes you find that one insurance video can be used for several other products.
Indeed,
And it just, you know, conjures all that information. So from what you've said, even when we're talking about strategies for creating demand for insurance, I think at the heart of it is education awareness. I think that's something yeah. you've said over and over again, being in a position to educate our consumers. So then, what challenges would we say are we facing, say, in our market to ensure that all these people have this information? Is it an issue of our focuses on the urban side, or is it also just still going back to the aspect of there needs to be a cultural shift?
Yeah, I think it's I'll tell you something, awareness. It's not about how affluent somebody is, how educated they are, how exposed they are. I found generally there's a low awareness when it comes to insurance.
Yes.
We go into big offices, a minister's office, a CEO's office. And when you talk about insurance, there's very little knowledge about insurance. So we have our work cut out for us as insurance companies to make sure that we get the message across to them about the benefits and the value of insurance. Yes, so we also have to sort of overcome that cultural impediment, okay, where we get people to start thinking about these so-called negative things, or start planning for negative eventualities, death, loss, and things of that nature, because that's what you're thinking about. Okay. So yes, we need to do a lot of education, but of course, education and sensitization is an expensive venture, because yes, basically insurance is for everybody. It's not for a particular group of people. So yeah, if we say it's students, probably it would be easy to say, okay, let's go into all the lending institutions, and sensitize them. Then that's it. But it's for the entire population. And then you're dealing with also language barriers. How do you translate insurance terminology into the various languages so that people understand? We've tried that. Even we do agriculture insurance as well. So we've tried that. We've gone translated some of our brochures into different languages. We get people on board who can help to translate or to give talks to farmers and things of that. So it is quite a tall order, and it's something that we continuously do. But of course, it's for the entire population. And so I think it's just like you are covering quite a lot of people. And then also you are explaining a lot of things. So you can't sort of like put people in a room for 2 hours and explain to them. You just overload them with information.
Yes.
So one of the things we're doing, if you look at our Facebook page, we have what we call Insurance Minute.
Okay.
Where we explain a concept of insurance within a minute.
Okay.
Okay. Make it simple, easy to understand. We even won an award for that as well last year for the Financial Literacy Awards.
Oh, okay.
So such things are things that we're trying to do. How do we get to so many people? So we're using digital channels, because I think you get a lot of traction from that. But also making it very simple to understand. Because yes, insurance is a complex product, and like I said, it's a contract, so you need to just make sure people understand the terms, the conditions, and the benefit and the value of insurance. So yes, critical amongst everything else is just to let the whole population know about insurance and make them understand and also appreciate the value of insurance.
I think with that, you mentioned an aspect of jargon and, you know, the kind of big words that you sometimes use. And also you've also brought out how you have the insurance in a minute and how you use social media and your digital platforms to market it in that sense. But now when we're in an industry or where you have to build credibility in an industry where you're often often perceived as complex and full of fine print, because at some point you mentioned something about your car breaks down and you're given a vehicle you can use. All right, I thought of that, and then I realized I was under the impression that I think anyone, say for instance, if you've got comprehensive, your car breaks down, they'll give you a vehicle, which is not the case. Because I remember I think that's probably something that happened to one of my friends. His car broke down and immediately he was driving around in another vehicle.
Indeed.
So in my mind, I assumed.
Anyone can get it.
Anyone will get it. So now this is where I guess people find it, like, how do they view, you know, the industry and the credibility of institutions, if then there's all these issues with the fine print where someone will say, oh yes, you came here, yes, we sold this to you, but did you read this at the bottom that says we can't do this aspect? So how do you really, you know, bring the skeptics or people and just really make them feel like, you know what, we've gone over this trust hurdle that we have and these people are credible?
Yes, I think there could be one or two things that we could do and that we are doing. And key among everything else is consumer education. Because once people understand, then they'll know exactly what they are getting. They'll know exactly what they are dealing with. When you buy a phone, you know what to look out for. Maybe it's the RAM, it's the processing speed, the storage that it has, the camera size, and all those things. So people have that understanding. But initially, it wasn't like that. You would buy something, and then later on, you say, "Oh, the camera is bad," or "This is slow," and things. But now people know more or less what features to look out for. So it should be the same with insurance. Once people have a good understanding of the product, then they'll be able to know what features to look out for, what to ask for, and things like that. So for now, I'd say, please ask. When you are with an insurance company, ask, what does this thing cover? What does it exclude? What eventualities am I not covered for? So then you know what you're going away with. But it's also incumbent on us as insurance companies to also inform people. So there is the deliberate effort, even from the regulator, to compel insurance companies before they sell a product, as they sell the product, to take the client through the key elements of that product so that they understand. Because that's the point at which you sort of like either lower or heighten the expectations. Because if somebody's expectations are like at 10, but what they are buying is at a 5, once something happens, that results in dissatisfaction.
Okay.
Okay. But when you lower the expectation, say, "Oh, what you're buying is this," then they are leaving. They know exactly what they are getting. Yes. If something happens, then the level of dissatisfaction will be zero or will be very minimal, because then they understood what they get. But also, so we do that with every sale. We try and tell the client the key elements of the product. But also, it's keeping our promises. Okay. Yes, sometimes they've been in the industry where certain claims have not been paid as they should have been paid. So I think that is something as an industry that we also need to build trust in, that if a genuine claim arises, let's pay those claims on time. Okay. That is something that we need to do. When you keep your promise, I mean, no one will not trust you. They will believe and have faith and have confidence in you. And also just making things simple and easy to understand. And that is something that we are doing. One of the things I did when I joined the insurance industry was I looked at the jargon and it just confused me. I said, okay, if I don't understand, what about more? The person out there? So I just broke down our products into four. I said, we do motor vehicle insurance, agriculture, business or corporate, and we do home insurance.
Okay.
If you look at these three, then you know, okay, people out there will easily understand.
Yes.
Okay. Instead of saying we've got funny terms, fire, accident, marine, all those things.
Yes.
Which may not make sense to somebody out there. But at least if you see these four products, you'll be able to say, oh, in business, okay, so there's some business insurance that I can get. Or home insurance, I can get something for my home. Motor vehicle insurance, that's an obvious one. So it's things like that we need to do just to build confidence. Basically, I think people understanding and knowing what they're getting, and we keep our promises. Very, very important. We need to keep our promise, and then there won't be any trust issues with the products and services.
I see. So in keeping your promises, and if it's something that you say you do well, right? What that means is you have people who, because you've already talked about the aspect of managing customers' expectations.
Yes.
You've told them exactly what they're getting out of it. And so when they need to actually claim, you then go a step further and go, you know, above what already they were expecting. And obviously, increasing that level of satisfaction to a high level. So with that in mind, how do you take advantage of those stories, those testimonials? Because a lot of the times we hear the fact that when you just put on ads as yourselves, as opposed to the word of mouth and referrals that come in from individuals that carry so much weight.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you take advantage of testimonials for the business, and just how important are they to give out these real life claim stories?
I think in marketing it's a well-known fact that there's no better way of marketing than through word of mouth. And so when you hear somebody that you know, somebody that you trust, talk about insurance, or you just see somebody that you know, okay, this is a genuine, real person, and they're talking about their personal experience with insurance or a particular product, you are more likely to trust than if we go and blow our own horn and say, get this, and it will do these magical things for you.
Yeah.
Okay? But if you just see a random person and you know, okay, this is a person, is a farmer, or he's a bus driver, or whatever, he works in an office, at least I know this person, and there's talking from their experience, it really, really sort of like provides that trust and confidence in a product, because then they're talking about exactly what they experienced. And when somebody's speaking from experience, I think we still talk about emotions. It raises those emotions because we put ourselves in their shoes and say, that could also happen to me. I'm like them. I do these same things.
Yes.
And so that could happen to me. And so it's a very fantastic tool for creating awareness, but also for selling. So yes, we try and as much as possible to use testimonials, and they have done a lot of good whenever we have used them to sell our products and services. Because also what happens with testimonials, people speak in a relatable way, in a relatable language.
Yes.
So they will not use these big words. They'll just say, no, ine, this is what happened to me, moto kayanga, or ka business kanga, kanachika, what.
Yes.
And the next minute I was back on my feet. And people say, okay, so this thing actually works, and it's actually for real. That way you build trust and a lot of confidence around insurance.
You know, when you said that, I gave that testimonial. For some reason, the first thing that came to mind is how people who are betting.
Oh, yes.
Oh, they do that very well.
Oh, yes. Oh,
be
yes.
The most relatable person to tell you, Tinawina.
I mean, I hope I won't be too controversial, but that's something the churches have used quite effectively.
Yes.
And that's why they have those testimonies.
Yes.
And people hear testimony, and the next minute they'll be going to that church because they say, hey, okay, is that what happened to that person? Let me. So churches have used it quite well in terms of marketing themselves, or at least preaching the word of God.
I think that's a lesson to how important is being used even in the different sectors of life.
Indeed.
Yeah. So even when we still talk about how people tend to want to relate to other people, for you, how important is the use of influencers now? Because now we also understand that, I mean, different influencers also, I mean, attract different generations.
Indeed.
So you also, you have the Gen Zs maybe that are coming in and are also now starting to come into, or are coming into money, and
yes,
are in positions where they can buy cars and you know, purchase, you know, this is a different insurance. So how do you also speak to those, in as much as you have to go and also find out what someone in a rural area needs?
Okay. Great that you've spoken about influencers, because that's a discussion we're having just with my team, because we want to do a campaign for some bus drivers and so on. So we were saying, if we go in our suits and ties and start speaking English there, we will not get through. So let's get people who help us deliver the same message that we want to deliver.
Yes.
And so we identified a few people that are relatable to that segment of the population, so that they can help us deliver. So influencers are very, very important. Like you rightly said, I may not understand the Gen Z and their lingo and all those things. And some of the things that we do even on TikTok, I don't understand, but but my team says this will work. I say, okay,
all right.
If you somebody will understand it out there and it works, that's fine with me. Because there's a generation gap.
Yes.
And so the things that they do, the things they say, the way they understand things, the way they pick up things is different. So we do have, yes, different influences every now and then that we use to try and get that message across. We do also use different channels also to get the message across, different media also to get that message across. But influencers play a big role because also they are trusted. Of course, the usual proviso is that they have to be relatable and they have to be people that can be trusted.
Okay.
So if somebody is talking to say, don't drink alcohol, it shouldn't be somebody who
is drinking alcohol, yes.
Things like that. So you have to use the right people who also deliver the message in a way that people understand and not also dilute your message or take it out in a wrong way into the public. So you have to be careful about choosing which influencers you use. There are certain products which are immune to all these things, but yes. Also there are certain products, especially when you're dealing with trust, that they must be able to trust this influencer that you are using to say the right things and to do the right things. And also their profile speaks to that as well. Yeah.
Yes, I think it's very important. I think the other thing most people do, unfortunately, is we have this habit of you only want to look at someone that's trending,
yeah.
Which in itself can be a challenge because they may not appeal to the people you actually want to target, and also looking at different aspects of their life. So I think, like you've mentioned, the importance of what is the consistency of this individual in this, you know, these various aspects of their lives and how it relates to our brand. I think that's very important in how they do all these things.
Very true.
So with your years of experience, what's one thing do you think insurers should do differently to attract more customers or just people who are selling unsold products?
I think it's awareness.
Okay.
Because you cannot buy something you don't know anything about, something you don't see value
True.
In. So if you are aware of the product, if you can see the value that it will bring into your life, then obviously you start thinking about buying that product or using that product or service. So I think the critical thing for insurance in particular is awareness. So too with any other unsold product. It's there for a reason, it meets a particular need. But if, like I said, I feel I'm comfortable, I'm okay. I've got my two cars, I've got my house, and I'm fine.
Yes.
Until somebody tells me, you know, that there's this risk and that risk and so on and so forth. There's climate change now. Okay, weather patterns are just unpredictable. So anything can happen. I think we've seen the pictures of houses being submerged up to the roof level. Maybe a thing that never happened before. Even certain areas of Lusaka, which never had flooding, are now flooding. So it's all those things that I think we need to create awareness so that then people see the need for insurance. And also for us as insurance companies, it's just to understand our customers. We should avoid the element of creating a product in a boardroom and then going out there. Yes, it's a good product, but does it really actually need satisfy a particular need? Because like I said, it could be like right now, it's economic challenges that people are facing. So
yes.
Have a product that speaks to that.
Yes.
And not just say, yes, this will help you if you have A, B, C, D. But that is not a priority of the particular client. They are thinking about my children. They are thinking about school fees. They are thinking about how they secure their business. And so we also need to understand our customers and also just evolve as time goes on with different products and also structure them in a different way so that then they actually are resolving a problem or a challenge in people's lives and actually creating a difference.
Oh, that's amazing. I think the point cannot be overemphasized. So if you know you're selling goods that people do not ordinarily wake up to get,
you're
selling unsold goods, awareness, people will not understand the value of your product
yeah.
until you communicate what that value is for them. Indeed. And I think that's something very important that we should all take away. So even as we come to a close with our closing questions.
So soon.
Imagine.
I'm just getting warmed up now.
We could go on and on and on.
Yes. Maybe we should have part two or something.
We should. I need to find another topic for you.
With the rest of the team.
Yes. No, uh-huh. that would be great. It awesome. Wouldn't be longer now.
No, that's great. Awesome.
If you were to pick one brand, product, or service which embodies Zambia and what we're all about, which one would you pick? And why?
I don't know whether it's a very difficult question.
It is.
Very difficult question. For me, and this might be a bit strange, but
okay.
I don't drink.
Okay.
So the product I'd pick would be a product like Mossy.
Okay.
Simply because I think it's one of the longest local brands that we've had.
Yes.
And even when I started thinking about going into marketing, it's the Mossy ads that stood out for me. I can still remember them even now. That and that's one of the things I discovered. I used to take a lot of or pay a lot of attention to adverts.
Yes.
And so the Mossy ads were just out of this world. They were more advanced than any other ads
we had on the market
at that time.
Yeah.
Yes. And so I don't drink, and I was young at that time.
Yes.
But I would look forward to seeing the Mossy ad, and then the fact that it's the heritage. It's the it's got the name of one of the seven wonders of the world.
Yes.
Okay. The Mosotunya. And so that is, it's won awards.
Yes.
So I think for me, Moss is one of the most powerful products or brands that we have. It stood the test of time. I think it's one of those things that I look at and say, okay, this, and I think they've done a good job. I don't drink, so I don't know where it ranks in terms of those who take alcohol. But for me, I think it's one of those brands that's really stood out, and I think showcases Zambia in terms of quality, in terms of heritage, in terms of speaking about the natural endowment that we have in terms of the Victoria Falls and so on and so forth. So yeah, that would be a product that I would probably think about.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Or fortunately,
yes.
Depending on where you stand, I also don't drink, but I understand.
You understand
everything you have said,
yeah.
And I think that's one of my one of the best answers I've heard yet. Yes, I love that you've brought. I mean, I haven't thought about it this whole time. It hasn't occurred to me. But when you said talking about it, I realized they have had great ads.
Yes.
They have stood the time.
Yes.
They do, represent one of the natural wonders of this world. And I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. I see you. Is there a marketing book that you feel has greatly impacted your marketing career?
Yeah. I would go back to CBU.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'll go back to the basics, which is Philip Kotler, Marketing Management.
The father of marketing.
Yes. I've read other books. I've listened to podcasts. Like there's a podcast I listen to, Marketing Over Coffee.
Okay.
But Philip Kotler sort of like laid the foundation for me in understanding marketing. I found that even then I didn't know that I actually wanted to go into banking and finance. That was like, because my father was a banker. So that's the route I was sort of like looking forward to.
Okay.
Although he did tell me, no, banking is not for you. You'll get bored. But I didn't believe him until I got to work in the bank for just a few months. And I said, okay.
I understand.
But anyway, sorry. So marketing management sort of like laid the foundation for me because I found when I was studying marketing management, it's like I was in my zone.
Okay.
It wasn't studying. Okay. I could walk into an exam and it's not one of those things that worried me. Like, what am I going to do?
Right,
have I studied this? Because it's like whatever concepts I picked up, they were very relatable.
Yes.
And I could relate to them and say, oh, okay, so this is why this thing sells. This is why this doesn't sell. This is why they change the color. This is why they use this media and not that media. So it made a lot of sense for me. And I didn't realize it at the time, but that it was, marketing was my favorite subject. So Philip Kotler Marketing Management just laid the foundation in terms of understanding what marketing was about. And once you understand the basics,
yes,
to say there's a need and just create the right product, package it in the right way, use the correct channels, and more than likely you will succeed. Just that basic understanding of marketing, for me, I think everybody else that I've read has just added on and maybe modernized it a bit.
Okay.
We had the four P's.
Yes.
Now they, I don't know whether it's 10 C's or whatever they are,
yes,
but those four P's, I think, are the pillar of marketing. And so reading Marketing Managed by Philip Kotler, I think for me, just set marketing for me, cemented marketing for me in my mind, and has helped me, I think, even with whatever other knowledge that I've gained over the years.
Oh, wow. And, you know, the fact that you've mentioned that, I remember also thinking to myself, and I was saying, with everything that has happened and all the changes, like digital transformations that have happened, like, the book was ahead of its time.
Yes, yes.
And the principles, like some of the very basic, the core principles, yes, stay the same regardless,
yes,
of what's changing.
What's happening, yes.
Yes, no, that's... That's a great book. So if you haven't read The Principles of Marketing,
please do.
I'm sure there should be a 13th edition now.
No, I think it's going to up to 19th.
Oh, really?
Or something. Yeah, I was shocked.
Exactly.
A few years ago, I think I thought, I don't know, it's 18th or 15th, somewhere there.
Yes, because I think they've even gone with, he's gone with the aspect of where he now does like 3.0 and 4.0.
Ah.
Yes.
Okay,
that
awesome.
Tradition, just to keep in time with the digital transformations that are happening.
Okay, I see.
Yes.
I see.
Then the last question would be, who do you think would be an amazing guest for this show that even you would like to listen to?
Ooh, local, international, or...
Look, well, we are shooting for the stars.
Okay, all right, okay. Of course, there are quite a number of names that sort of come to mind, but... I like to promote local, so
okay,
it would be Dr. David Nama.
Okay.
He is, I think he's the one behind Dana Holdings.
Yeah, Dana Group, yes.
Yes. I listened to him, I think we invited him for one of the marketing conferences, so I'm not sure, at some point.
Okay.
And he's phenomenal. Just his understanding of business and how, and his business philosophy.
Okay.
Just blew me away. And he's a local Zambian, and I think he's done amazing things with his business. And he's just a great speaker. And when you listen to him, he will motivate you to do things that you probably didn't think of. So I think because he's such a great businessman, I'd assume he's also a great marketer.
Yes.
And I think he also preaches. I think he's a preacher.
Okay.
So I think he's an all-around great presenter, great orator, great businessman. And I think he has gems of wisdom that anyone could benefit from. Yeah.
We're putting this out into the universe. Dr. Nama, we would love to have a conversation. Well, no, that brings us to the end of our conversation.
Oh, wow. So soon. Yeah.
No, thank you so much, Mr. Ngoma, for making the time to be with us. And I'm sure our listeners will pick up so many great gems. People who are selling unsold products will pick up amazing lessons on how they can go forward to ensure that they can create value for their businesses and their consumers. So we are super grateful and honored to have you here.
Thank you.
Can't wait for the next conversation we
2.0,
have. 2.0, yes.
Yeah, no. It was great being here. And I've enjoyed myself thoroughly. I think just kudos to you guys for what you're doing. I think this is, I think one of, if I don't know whether there's any other platform like this, but I think you're doing great things. We'll support you and yeah, you're doing great things and keep on pushing and keep on doing what you're doing. There's definitely a need for such a podcast because yes. It's local.
Yes.
Like I said, I listen to foreign podcasts about yes. marketing, but I think it's time we also had something and then maybe share it with students and other people so that they just get to pick up a few gems so then marketing becomes really, really practical. So kudos to you and thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. Thank you so much for those kind words. And we are happy to have invited you.
Awesome. Awesome.
So to our listeners, I hope you enjoyed today's conversation and things you can pick up. Please remember to follow us on our socials, drop us a message, tell us who you would love to listen to. And please, let's get in touch, let's get conversing. And from me and the rest of the team in the absentia, remember to keep your finger on the marketing pulse.
We hope that you have enjoyed today's episode just as much as we have.
Till next time, remember to keep your finger on the marketing pulse.